come to order. Will members vote to signify your presence? The roll shows 19 members present. Please stand for the invocation by the chaplain, Jesse Keel, Congregation Sukkot Shalom Jewish Community.
With deepest respect for the beliefs of all Alaskans, I invite you to join me in prayer. Adonai tzifatai tiftach ufi yagid tehilatecha, Eternal God, open my lips that my mouth may declare your glory. There are issues of import and points of disagreement before the Senate today. We ask only that every member be guided by conscience, the pursuit of justice ever tempered by charity and loving kindness. May disagreement never bring them to discord. Oseh shalom bimromav, hu yaaseh shalom aleinu ve'al kol yoshvei tevel bimru amen. May the one who makes peace in the high places help us and help all those on earth to achieve shalom, peace, oneness with ourselves, with one another, and with the divine. Ken yehi ratzon, so may it be God's will.
Senator Wolkowski, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The pause. Will the secretary please certify the journal?
I certify as to the correctness of the journals for the 91st and 92nd legislative days.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent the journals be approved as certified by the secretary.
Without objection, so ordered. Introduction of guest, Senator Elton.
Madam President, I saw you looking at me. I'm privileged today to have a large group of students. They're all students from Zanakahini, which is one of our junior high schools here in the community. They're 7th and 8th graders. They're here in the building for part of the day as part of their government unit. And I'm not going to read all the names of parents and teachers and students, but I did mention to them before the four sessions started that I've got a great job, that we all have a great job, and they ought to think about it because today we're going to be making a decision on how to spend over $3 billion. And so it's an important day for us, and it's a good day for them to be visiting in the building because of the import of the decisions that we're going to be making today and in the next several days before the end of the session. If the body could welcome the students from Zanakahini.
Are there additional introductions today? Senator Davis.
Thank you, Madam President. There's a young lady that's sitting in the gallery in back of me that I'd like to introduce to the body. She's going to be working in my office for the rest of this week, and her name is Melanie Mitchell. Would you please stand? She's already standing. And she works at the Native Tribal Health Consortium, and she's a senior officer there. She also is in a leadership program, and she has a mentor that she's coming down to work with this week, and that is Donnie Flieger, who works in my office. And I might as well just introduce her also because she has not been introduced to the body. I would like for you to help me welcome her here. She plans to visit around with various legislators while she's here, and also I've introduced her to a senator who happens to be Senator French. And they had some discussion already, and look forward to seeing this young lady. Help me welcome her.
Are there further introductions today? Messages from the governor?
Message dated April 12th, stating I have read the following resolution and transmitted the engrossed and enrolled copy to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Order, Senate Resolution Number 5, Order of the Eastern Star Communication Week, Senate Resolve Number 5. I have no further messages from the governor.
Messages from the House.
Message dated April 16th, stating, the House of Representatives respectfully invites the Senate to a joint session on Monday, May 14th at 11 a.m. for confirmation of Governor Palin's appointees.
Madam President, I move that the Senate accept the House invitation to meet in joint session to consider the confirmation of Governor Palin's appointees.
Without objection, so ordered.
Message dated April 16th, stating the House has passed and is transmitting the following for consideration. CS for House Bill number 166, Finance, by the House Finance Committee. Senator Terrio has been added as a cross-sponsor. An act relating to contributions from permanent fund dividends to community foundations, to certain educational organizations, and to certain other charitable organizations, and providing for an effective date.
We'll meet up with this corresponding legislation in Finance.
Those are all the messages from the House, Madam President.
Communications.
I have no communications this morning.
Reports of standing committees.
The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered Senate Bill number 3, Community Dividend Program. New fiscal note, signing no recommendation, Senator Olson, Chair. Signing due pass, Senators Thomas, Wagner, Kukesh. The bill has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered Senate Bill number 28, Limit Overtime for Registered Nurses, and recommends a HESS committee substitute. New fiscal and zero fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senator Davis, Chair, Senator Elton. Signing no recommendation, Senator Thomas. Signing amend, Senators Dyson, Cowdery. The bill has a further referral to the Labor and Commerce Committee. The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill number 76, Tuition for Certain Children, and recommends the previous HESS committee substitute. New fiscal note, previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Hoffman, Stedman, co-chairs, Senators Elton, Thomas, Dyson, Huggins, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill number 89, Electronic Monitoring of Gang Probationer, and recommends a Finance Committee substitute. New fiscal note, previous indeterminate and zero fiscal notes, signing no recommendation, Senators Hoffman, Stedman, co-chairs, Senator Olson. Signing due pass, Senators Elton, Thomas, Dyson, Huggins. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill number 100, Substance Abuse Mental Health Programs, and recommends a Finance Committee substitute. New zero fiscal note, previous indeterminate fiscal note, signing due pass, Senators Hoffman, Stedman, co-chairs, Senators Elton, Thomas, Dyson, Huggins, Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 136, Municipal Road Service Areas. New zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Olson, Chair, Senators Thomas, Wagner. Signing no recommendation, Senator Kukesh. The bill has a further referral to the Transportation Committee. The Finance Committee considered House Bill number 168, Land Transfers, Alaska Railroad, and DOTPUF. Previous zero fiscal notes, signing due pass, Senators Hoffman, Stedman, co-chairs, Senators Elton, Thomas, Huggins. Signing no recommendation, Senator Olson. The bill has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. The State Affairs Committee considered CS for House Joint Resolution number 11, State Affairs, title amended, State's Control of National Guard. Previous zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator McGuire, chair, Senators French, Stevens, Green. The resolution has no further referral. It is in the Rules Committee. Those are all the standing committee reports.
Reports of special committees.
There are no special committee reports.
Introduction of Senate resolutions.
I have no Senate resolutions for introduction.
Senator Ellis.
Can
we have a brief please? Thank you, Senator Ellis. Senate will come back to order. Senator Hoffman.
I can move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread on the journal. Introduction of Senate bills.
Sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 139 by Senator Olson, an act repealing a limitation on the liability of certain airfield owners or operators.
Transportation.
Senate Bill number 157 by Senators Dyson, French, McGuire, Ellis, Bundy, an act relating to human trafficking and prostitution.
State Affairs, Judiciary, Finance.
Senate Bill number 158 by Senator Kukesh, an act designating the bridge on the George Parks Highway directly north of the Alaska Native Veterans Honor Bridge as the Shirley Dementia Memorial Bridge.
Transportation.
Those are all the Senate bills for introduction.
Consideration of the daily calendar.
Senate Bill number 109 by the Senate Rules Committee by request of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. An act relating to the regulation and permitting of drilling and other operations by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. To civil penalties assessed by the Commission to reconsideration and appeal of decisions and the allocation of costs in investigations and hearings before the Commission, and to information filed with and fees of the Commission and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee considered the bill and recommends a Resources Committee substitute and a zero fiscal note, signing due pass, Senator Huggins chair, Senator Stedman, Stevens, Green, signing no recommendation, Senator Wilkowski. There is a Resources Committee substitute.
Senator Huggins. Thank you, Madam President. I move the Resources Committee substitute.
Without objection, the Resources Committee substitute will be considered in lieu of the original bill.
I have no amendments.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that CS for Senate Bill 109, resources be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we are in third reading.
CS for Senate Bill number 109, resources, an act relating to the regulation and permitting of drilling and other operations by the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, to civil penalties assessed by the Commission to reconsideration and appeal of decisions and the allocation of costs in investigations and hearings before the Commission, and to information filed with and fees of the Commission and providing for an effective date.
Chair debate. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam President. I'll be brief. This bill was introduced at the request of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, and essentially an update. But there's a couple of elements that are important to be pointed out, and the first one being that the bill will change the maximum amount of a penalty from $5,000 a day for each day of violation to provide for a civil penalty of no more than $100,000 for an initial violation and no more than $10,000 a day for each day thereafter on which the violation continues. So the penalty piece has been updated, and there's a significant delta there, if you will. In addition, as you look at, there's a piece about transparency which narrows the data that would be subject to a 24-month period of confidentiality. Only the data from exploratory and stratigraphic test wells and to those portions of application permits such wells that the Commission determines contains proprietary information. So by and large, it's an update that has a number of elements, but those are the highlights. But I will just mention one other for those that might have some interest. It also increases the civil penalty for natural gas that is flared, vented, or otherwise determined to be waste from the fair market value to two times the fair market value. And with that, I will conclude.
Is there further debate? Senator Terrio.
Thank you. I'm wondering if the previous speaker can indicate to us, I didn't ask for an explanation of the resources CS, but the changes that were made in the CS, were they all requests that were made by AOGCC?
I'll just go section by section with the request. The answer is it was done in conjunction with AOGC. Section 1 through 11 is essentially rewording clarity. Section 12 is reworded for clarity and adds an underground injection well for the purposes of gas storage, which was done in coordination with the Commission. Section 14 combines the material from sections 14 through 17, and the substantive change in committee substitute is on page 8, lines 18 and 19. The civil penalty for the Commission may impose is not more than $100,000 for the initial violation and not more than $10,000 for each day thereafter on which the violation continues. And sections 15 through 17 are just renumbered and language remains the same as the original bill.
Thank you. Is there further debate? We have before us CS for Senate Bill 109 Resources. Shall CS for Senate Bill 109 Resources pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All senators have voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote. The secretary will tally the vote.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
A And so CS for Senate Bill 109 Resources has passed the Senate.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on the final passage of the bill be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause.
CS for House Bill number 95, Finance, by the House Finance Committee. An act making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government for certain programs and to capitalize funds, making appropriations under Article 9, Section 17C, Constitution of the State of Alaska, and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended a Finance Senate Committee substitute, signing due pass Senators Stedman, Hoffman, co-chairs Senators Elton, Thomas, Huggins. Signing no recommendation, Senator Olson. Signing amend, Senator Dyson. There is a Finance Senate Committee substitute.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee bill be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? And the Senate Finance version will be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There's an amendment number one by Senator Dyson.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, move amendment one.
Yeah, thank you. I was surprised that there was some conditional language that's been in the budget in the past that makes certain that schools receiving our state funds do not stop military recruiters and ROTC from using the campus facilities. And so I, because I assumed that this would be always a part of our budget language, I missed it when it went through the process. So this amendment just restores language that we've had in the operating budget in the past to make sure that schools do not discriminate against military recruiters and Boy Scouts and a couple of other federal agencies. And so I would encourage a positive vote here that makes sure that these folks have access to public facilities and that we continue what I thought was a wise policy in the past. Thank you.
Further debate? Brief please. Back to order. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam President. On assurance from the co-chair of finance that this matter can be dealt with, I'll withdraw this amendment.
Thank you. Amendment number one is withdrawn.
There is an amendment number two by Senator Dyson.
Senator Dyson?
Move amendment number two. Yeah, thank you. This is language that was in the House bill when it came over and just copies language. It's virtually out of the state law and making sure that expenditures of funds for non-essential medical procedures don't happen in a violation of state law. And so what I want to do is just return this language to our bill that was in the Senate bill, so it's not a conferenceable issue. And that's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there a debate? Senator Terrio.
Yes, Madam President. I am supportive of the amendment. In fact, I would ask unanimous consent that I be shown as a co-sponsor on the amendment. Quite often people refer to this language as the Henry Hyde language in the U.S. Senate. It has basically puts a limit on the use of public money for provision of abortion services. This would just take us up to and match basically the limit that the federal government has placed on the use of federal funds. And so if I could be shown as a co-sponsor, and I will be supporting the amendment. Thank you.
Without objection, you will be shown as a co-sponsor. Is there further debate?
Madam Chair.
Senator
Dyson. Madam President, thanks. Maybe I should have said something about kind of the historical context here. This in no way restricts access to abortion. It just has to do with the funding of the abortions that are not medical necessity. And I think that any polls I've seen in our state, even many folks who are in favor of the promiscuous use of abortion are in opposition to the public funding of it. Kind of a historical precedent, 150 years ago when the slavery battles were going on in the U.S., it was kind of a pro-choice perspective that said, well, if you don't like slavery, don't own one, but don't interfere with my business. Let me do what I want. That got to be an outrage in the North with the Fugitive Slave Act, in which Northern courts and Northern peace officers were forced to return runaway slaves who had been heroically spirited out of that condition with the Underground Railroad to the North, and Northern public institutions were forced to return people to that status, which those folks, many in the North, felt was just a moral anathema. That Runaway Slave or Fugitive Slave Act, I think, was 1837, and just produced an outrage. And the kind of the paradigm shift from having to being able to at least ignore what was going on in other jurisdictions to being forced to have your tax money participate in something that was considered to be a moral anathema, a feeling I certainly endorse, just outraged the North and began added huge impetus to the abolitionist move that finally ended up in the succession of the Southern states and the horrendous Civil War. And I think the same kind of moral outrage exists here in our state when folks realize that their public resources are being used to terminate the lives of viable children whose only sin is that they are unwanted. I'd encourage that we put this intent language back in our budget. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Senator Ellis.
Can we have an ease, please?
Read the ease. Is there further debate on amendment number 2? The question is, shall amendment number 2 to CS for CS for House Bill number 95 Finance be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Senator Stevens from yay to nay. All senators have voted. The secretary will lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote. Tally the vote.
4 yays, 15 nays.
So amendment number 2 has failed to pass the Senate.
May we have
Secretary
at ease, please?
Brief at ease.
There's an amendment number 3 by Senator Wilken.
Madam President, move amendment number 3.
Okay. There is objection, Senator Wilken.
Good morning, Madam President. The members, please look at the amendment. It's a lot of numbers, but it's pretty straightforward. Lines 2 and 3 is a summary of the amendment, and the effect is to add $4.9,200,000 of general fund and $470,000 of University of Alaska receipts for a total addition to the university's budget of $5,370,200. Lines 5 and 6 is the general fund component of that add, and line 8 and 9 is the UA receipts component. The rest just puts in place what those six lines are meant to do. Couple of things about this. The $4.9 million is a request for increase in two different categories. Now, the first is fixed costs. The university came to us this year with a budget that showed to the general fund a $7 million savings. They used that $7 million, and part of it was their fixed costs to cover operations of the university. Some would suggest that the fixed costs have been covered. They haven't been. The other body in this budget essentially takes the $7 million and uses it elsewhere in the budget. And the net result of all that is that as it stands today, the university is short about $3.6 million in fixed costs. So what does that mean, the university operations? The way that's spread out is that the effect will be on the UAA and Kenai Homer Matsu campuses will absorb about $1.3 million in fixed costs. Fairbanks will take about a $1.7 million hit. And Southeast campuses out of Juneau will absorb about $600,000. So it's real. It's real money, and the university would like to have part of their savings, half of it, to get back to their fixed costs as we've done with the rest of the agencies. The other component is program expansion. It's about $1.3 million. In their red book, they set forth some priority items to use up to that $7 million, and as we work through the process, they've added $1.3 million, and this amendment funds some priority programs in both engineering and in health. If I could, in the community health programs in College of Rural Alaska, $143,000 general fund dollars. In my town, a dental program at the Tano Valley campus, $233,000. This amendment will fund a nursing corps expansion at the Anchorage campus with $750,000. Number four, the WAMI program, which we've been so successful on, needs the support in Anchorage of $280,000 in this amendment. Also at Anchorage, a Bachelor of Science Engineering Enrollment Growth Program needs $200,000 in general fund to continue that initiative. Still in the School of Engineering at UAA and UAS, this provides $100,000 to help them continue their 1+3 program. And lastly, this amendment will fund construction management, continued expansion of construction management degree at Anchorage campus. So it's two things. It covers fixed costs, which we've done for everyone else. And the second is that it covers priority program expansion in medical and in engineering. Some would say that the university budget has grown faster than the other budget. That's simply not true. But if you took it just at face value, I'm not sure that that's a problem in our state. The university is different than other agencies, and we've all talked about that, and we all argue about that. The fact of the matter is, you give the university money, and you get jobs back, and you get dollars back, new dollars, real dollars, that grows our economy. So covering their fixed costs, working on expanded programs, just brings them back to where they to fund their top priorities. Madam President, and I would encourage the members of positive support. Thank you.
Senator Bates. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in opposition to this amendment. Things aren't quite what they seem sometimes. When we dealt with the University of Alaska's budget this year, one of the areas that we ran into, not only at the university level, but across all of the state departments, was dealing with the retirement system. And the university has a ORPS system, a little different than what the state has on the supplemental benefit system, but their contribution rates were initially set in their budget at 33.68%. What ends up happening when we struggle over the years to last couple and probably the next couple to deal with the retirement situation and get the cash flow under control, not only for the university but for all our municipalities, we want to pull that contribution rate down. So the legislature this year has taken some action to not only pull down the contribution rate of ORPS, which was originally budgeted at the university of, again, at 33.7%, but to bring that down to the 12.5% range. That legislative action is not a direct savings that should be flowed through to whatever entity we're dealing with. That was created by the action of the legislature and created a savings of $4.9 million. That is most of the amendment we have before us, other than there's some federal receipt authority. So when you propose a budget and you put it together in October and November and you bring it forward and you have a substantially high contribution rate, substantially higher than normal contribution rate for your retirement system, and there's action taken by the legislature to bring that down, it's kind of artificial savings created. We have taken all of the state departments, and I recognize this, the university is handled different, and pulled those monies back out of all of the departments. So we're treating the university no different than anybody else. But as referenced, there is what the university proposes in their budget, in their red book.
which has been talked about today. The governor, let me back up a little bit, all the departments submit budgets to the governor. The governor, in her wisdom, increases or decreases things out of those different departments, and she submits the governor's amended budget to the legislature. The university is different. They have the red book. The governor looks at that, submits a budget to us for review, but the university comes back in with the red book. No other department in the state has that ability to, again, start back from the very beginning and going around the governor. We started with, in the committee, the governor's budget and worked on those numbers and then went through the budgetary process. The way the system works with the university, we allocate a line item to them and they have the ability to spend the monies wherever they want to. However, I should say the Board of Regents directs the allocation from Southeast campuses to Fairbanks to Anchorage to out west, and they have the responsibility and the authority then to take the appropriation given to them by the legislature and allocate it to make the most efficient university system for the dollar, and I'm sure that they are doing a very good job of doing that. But anytime you have a potential dollar increase, in this case, the $4.9 million, which I've previously explained, came from the retirement savings. There's always things you can spend it on, and you can create a list that looks very attractive, which, you know, I certainly agree. All those items listed earlier are needed and good items, and we should, you know, review these items going forward to see, you know, what the university does absorb or doesn't absorb and what they do and don't do with them. But if I could just address the fixed cost issue. The university's fixed costs are fully funded by the legislature in this budget. There is a disagreement between the legislature and their calculations with what the university views as their fixed costs. So they, in their heart, I'm sure, feel that their fixed costs are covered, and we can show in our analysis that they are, in fact, they feel that they're not covered, and we can show, in fact, they are covered. Now, if we take a little bit of history, and we take a look at what's been going on with the university, which we all want to advance the university, we have a huge capital project coming in our state called the gas line. We don't want to be in a position that we were in the early 70s, or late 60s, I should say, coming into a big capital project, the oil line, that happened in the middle 70s. And have the state in a position where we have a workforce that wants to work, but we don't have the technical ability or skill level of a workforce to get as many jobs as we would like. So the legislature, along with the university, legislature helping the funding of the university and their programs, are moving forward to ensure that the state of Alaska is in the best position it can to have all of the Alaskans that can pass chemical tests and can read, write, and do some arithmetic and have jobs. And some of those that have a little bit problems with some of those items, particularly the read, writing, and arithmetic, there's other employment opportunities that we can work on. But to have programs so we can have the younger kids that are now in junior high and coming out of high school have available training and be tooled up so they can get a very good job on this gas line, which will set them on a course that will last them their working life, like the kids that were my age at the time in the early 70s or mid 70s that got out of high school, got into the apprenticeship programs, and it carried them through and still carrying them through to today. So when we go back and we look, is the university been unnecessarily squeezed? I would say no. When we go through and we look at the cash flow, when we take out the retirement system, because it does distort things across not only the university but across the state and our municipalities. But in 2005, they had a 8.4% increase. In 2006, a 9.3%. In 2007, a 13%. This year, it's 4.7. So not only does this year's budget cover their fixed costs, but Madam President, it gives them the ability to expand, help us facilitate the education of our workforce so we can have more Alaskans employed. And with that, Madam President, I strongly urge my colleagues to vote down this amendment, and we will continue over the next couple of years working with the university to ensure that their fixed costs are covered, that we do have an educated and tooled up workforce ready to build our gas line. So when we're going into retirement, the gas line is built and flowing with Alaska labor. Thank you, Madam President.
Is there further debate? On Amendment Number 3, Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Madam President. On Amendment Number 3, well, we heard from the proposer of the amendment that these are real reductions to the university. And I know quite often the thought is, well, there's a couple of Fairbanks guys arguing for the university, but we heard how this would be spread. You know, $1.3 million to UAA, the $600,000 in UAS, $1.7 in UAF. And with regards to training up for a gas pipeline, I was in a discussion last night with regard to the pipeline we hope to build, the size of the individual pieces of pipe, the weight per foot, gives us an idea of each stick of pipe, how much it's going to weigh, two per trailer, how much the bridges are going to have to be redesigned, re-engineered. So where are those engineers going to come from? Hopefully we help to be training them here in the state of Alaska. I spoke to a high school class the last time I was home, and I told them, I advised them that they should really be paying attention to the headlines, because the debate on gas pipeline and what we do to train up for the gas pipeline is of material importance to them, because they will be, they're at the perfect age to get trained up to hopefully work on bringing that next great resource to the state of Alaska to market. But if we don't have the programs in place to do that, then that opportunity for them as future wage earners in the state of Alaska is somewhat diminished. So I don't think that you can just pass things off as, well, there's a disagreement. You know, the prime sponsor of the amendment has explained to us that there is an impact to the university's requested budget. This will require the university to tighten its belt, to cut back on programs, and those may very well be the programs that we're hoping to put that next generation of Alaskans in the best possible position to get the most benefit out of the gas pipeline. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there further debate on Amendment Number 3? Read the ease. We'll come back to order. On Amendment Number 3, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam President, for that brief at ease. I just wanted to get some clarification from the Senator from Sitka. The budget, the summary I have in front of us shows that the University of Alaska line goes up 2.7, and I just checked with the senator, and he said it's 4.7, and the difference is, as here we go again, is retirement money and all that. So just leave it at that. It's somewhere between 2.7 and 4.7. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Senator Hoffman.
Just to make a clarification from the senator from North Pole, I don't believe that they will have to tighten their belts, because this was an increment that was requested, and this increment was denied.
Senator McGuire.
President, Madam President, just on the record, I'm sending this message out to the university and to all of the university supporters in my district that I will be opposing this amendment today. However, that by no means indicates my lack of support or continued support for the university. And I would hope that the members of the Board of Regents would consider strongly the line items that have been placed in the Red Book for things such as the nursing program, the WAMI program, and the engineering program at the campus in my community of Anchorage. The member behind me, the co-chairman of finance, spoke very eloquently about the university being that direct source for job training. We know that we have a shortage, Madam President, as you know, of doctors and nurses and engineers in our state, and this is the training ground, our campus there in Anchorage. So I would certainly hope that working within the numbers allocated to them this year, that the university could see their way and the Regents see their way to funding these very important programs.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Is there further debate? So the Senate adopt Amendment Number 3 to Senate CS for CS for House Bill 95. Members may proceed to vote. All members have voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote. Secretary will tally the vote.
5 yeas, 15 nays.
So Amendment Number 3 has failed to pass the Senate.
There is an Amendment Number 4 by Senator Terrio.
Senator Terrio.
Move Amendment Number 4.
There is objection, Senator Terrio.
Thank you. An explanation on the amendment. It is an increase of $151,600 to the line item in the budget, Protective and Community Services for Senior, under the Senior and Disability Services. This is a small increment to the program that funds assisted living services for residents 18 years or older who are disabled, impaired, or have a significant deficits in self-care, who without assisted living are subject to or at risk of abuse, neglect, or exploitation by others. The services are available to those who are low income and have applied for financial assistance from other agencies, organizations, or programs as required by regulation, and who have exhausted the use of alternative financial assistance as is required by regulations. Those who are eligible are more than seniors, as I mentioned, is for residents 18 years or older. However, the majority of the recipients from these programs are seniors or elderly. So it's a fairly small amount of money into an existing program that drives the dollars down to the seniors that can demonstrate the highest need. And again, it's those who would run the risk of being in abusive or neglected situations if it were not for these programs. As I mentioned, the requirements say that they can only have a certain amount of income, and they also have to have already applied for other services. So it's sort of the services of last resort. The amendment is net zero. It has an offset for the $151,000 that comes from our own legislative budget, Madam President. The offset comes from a dollar amount that originally sprung from a carry forward between fiscal year 06 and 07. Okay, so the carry forward from 06 to 07 inflated the legislature's budget. That was then built into the base, and that has carried forward into the 08 budget. So it's money that we, the members of the legislature, are not likely to need, and it would just be part of what has turned into sort of a growing carry forward. So a fairly small amount of money for existing programs, and as I have mentioned in the past in debate on the floor and as I campaigned on, I would rather see us drive dollars to the most needy through existing programs instead of creating new ones. Now, we had legislation on this floor a week and a half ago, continuing a program, actually, because the program was the previous program was sunsetting, we created a new program. And it seems like there's always a propensity, which I think stems somewhat from just human nature, that we want to start something new. We want to build new buildings, and we're hard-pressed to maintain the ones we have. We want to start new programs, but we're hard-pressed to fund adequately some of the ones we have. So what I'm proposing here is, again, a small amount of money, net zero amendment, money that is in our legislative budget that we will not need to drive assistance down through existing programs to seniors that have the highest needs. And these are seniors that benefit from these programs. They're programs of last resort. Thank you.
Further debate, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. We did receive testimony from several individuals that supported independent living and interpretive services for the deaf to assist them in their daily lives, and the committee listened to that testimony. in many of the same categories as the previous speaker had identified. And as a result of that public testimony, we had added on page 24 under vocational rehabilitation to the line item on page on the vocational rehabilitation on line 18, the subcategory under lines 26 and 27, independent living rehabilitation, there was a $100,000 increment to independent living centers that they had requested, and we also added an additional $50,000 in helping the hard of hearing for in interpreting, because it was hard for them to get services. So these were the categories that we had heard testimony on, and the categories that were mentioned by the previous speaker were not addressed, and we just added the dollars that we received public testimony on. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there further debate? Senatorial, wrap up.
Thank you, just in wrap up. Those other services that were just referenced to on page 24, they may very well be some of the services here that the applicant has to avail themselves of first, but if they are out of funds or they have tapped out on those programs, again, the one that that this amendment speaks to are sort of the programs of last resort for the seniors and elderly in our society that can show the highest need. So I don't think that the need that we're trying to address here with a small amount of money, again, coming from a source where we won't even notice its absence, could be very meaningful to the person that has tapped out all those other programs, has tapped out their own personal ability, but still have a pressing need so that they don't fall into a neglectful or abusive situation. Thank you.
Is there further debate? The question is, shall amendment number 4 to SCS or Senate Bill Committee Substitute House Bill 95 Finance pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. All have voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change? The secretary will record the vote. The secretary will tally the vote.
5 yeas, 15 nays.
And so amendment number 4 has failed to pass to be adopted.
There's an amendment number 5 by Senator Terrio.
Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Madam President. I move amendment number 5. Okay. Just in explanation, this amendment proposes an increase in the budget line item on page 20, line 25. $233,800. So again, in the whole scheme of things, a fairly modest amount of money, just short of $250,000. Again, it is net zero. I figured that there might not be a chance that the previous amendment would pass, so I've used the same funding source, even though there is enough room in that carry forward that we could have funded them both. This program is into a grants line that pushes money again down to the neediest in our society. It is the grant line that funds Senior Meals on Wheels, respite services. We work with grantees, and these partnerships use funds to provide these vital supportive services to older Alaskans. The partners provide up to 60% of the true cost. So what we're doing is trying to leverage a small amount of state money for these programs. They also use other fundraising, other grants, some federal funds. So we're going to be able to leverage, again, a fairly small amount of state funds to provide a lot of very good needs. This gets back again to my sense that we should, instead of starting new programs and patting ourselves on the back while we know that we've got other programs that are going lacking for money, that we should try and drive the benefit down through the existing network that we have. Don't create a new bureaucracy or branch of bureaucracy, new offices, new caseworkers, let's just use the network that we have. I think that will result in the largest amount of the dollar actually getting into the recipient's hands. And I know that you all have know of the great benefit that programs like Senior Meals on Wheels are to their constituents. So with that small amount of money from a source where we won't even realize that it's gone, net zero to the budget, no increase, and ask for your support.
Further debate, Senator Hoffman.
Again, Madam President, when we heard public testimony, this area was not an item that was testified as an area of need, but I do believe it is an area of need. But again, the two areas that we received specific requests from individuals from throughout the state of Alaska, this was not just from one community, but from several communities, and that was for the independent living grants line and an additional $50,000 for vacation rehabilitation for interpretive services. And that is what we had responded to during the public hearing process.
Thank you. Is there further debate? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. In response to the maker of the amendment, one of the things that has been referred to has been the continual funding of programs that are already in place, and I got the sense that there was some resistance to go ahead and have new programs in place. I just want to make sure it's clear that programs that are in place certainly are not one size fits all. There's always room for improvement, and that's the reason for the new program put in place that was referred to go ahead and fill those areas that have been identified where people that are needy, people that are qualified, and people that just need some help out there. So with that, I would be voting against this amendment.
Bridget East. Senate come back to order, please. Senator Sherrill.
In wrap up, Madam President, I appreciate the comments by the co-chairman of Finance about money that was put into assisted living. Of course, if we encourage, and we do want to encourage our elderly to stay in their home where they're the most comfortable as long as they can, that's when they might need a meal, a hot meal delivered once or twice a week the most. So the programs dovetail together. And again, this is no increase to the budget, so if in your coalition you have talked about the cap you have and trying to keep control of spending, this is net zero. It's from a funding source where we're likely to lapse the money anyway. And we will feel no pinch in our own operations from this money being shifted over. So kudos for the help for the assisted living, but if we keep people in their homes, don't we want to make them comfortable while they're in their homes? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there further debate? Question is, shall Amendment Number 5 to SCS for Senate Committee Substitute House Bill 95 Finance be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Members have voted. Secretary will lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote. Secretary will tally the vote.
5 yeas, 15 nays.
So Amendment Number 5 has failed to pass the Senate.
I have no.
Madam President, brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Come back to order. Madam Secretary.
I have no further amendments.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate CS for House Bill 95 Finance be considered in gross advance third reading and placed on final passage.
No objection, we are in third reading.
Senate CS for CS for House Bill Number 95 Finance, an act making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government for certain programs and to capitalize funds, making appropriations under Article 9, Section 17C, Constitution of the State of Alaska, and providing for an effective date.
Chair debate. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. This operating budget, as well as the subsequent one, the mental health budget for FY 98, I'd like to explain, first of all, does not include some of the services that were addressed in last year's budget, but will be addressed hopefully in a following appropriation bill. those being the local government assistance and increases to the K through 12 operating budget. The what is included for the K through 12 operating budget is the base student allocation, less $75 million that is to fund the TERS program that's included in the administrative budget. The overall budget this year includes $3.43 million in general funds, $3.43 billion in general funds, $5.5 billion in federal funds, program receipts and fees. The total budget for FY08 is $8.92 billion. In FY95, just 2 short years ago, the general fund was spending under $2.5 billion. And I have the chart that was provided by Legislative Finance. The amount that in FY09, just 2 years from now, it is expected that the general fund appropriation will exceed $4 billion. This is a staggering growth rate that of 60% in just a few short years. Last summer, we passed the new PPT tax legislation, which gives the state much needed additional revenues with the revision of ELF. But even with the increases, as you can see, it's anticipated that we will be in a deficit spending situation as early as next year, with it escalating every year thereafter. This gives me great concern, and as it should give concern to every member of this body and the people of the state of Alaska. It is with this in mind that the Senate Finance Committee members were instructed to hold the line and when they're giving consideration to their FY08 budget. As a result of this budget, it represents a reduction of, this budget represents a reduction of 67 positions from the governor's amended budget. But probably the biggest change in this year's budget over previous years is how we're going to be addressing the $1 billion deficit. And that is the how we're going to address contributions to PERS and TERS and their rates. Last year, under the component of direct appropriations to retirement, we had appropriated $18.589 billion. This year, in the Senate's version, as well as in the House version, there is an increase to this component of $431.4 million. So the total now is just a little under $450 million in total funds. This is a staggering increase to the state of Alaska. But it's very hard to figure out how that should be addressed. In the PERS and TERS component, well, basically in the TERS component, if individuals would look in their budget, I believe on page, starting on page 57, the last line, line 31, the retirement systems, you'll see a sum there of $269.9 million. These dollars are going to be going to the Department of Administration. How this number was derived at was that, as everyone is well aware, there has been merged rates. And in the governor's budget, the rate was going to be set, on contribution rate was going to be set to bring that percentage down to 20%. That was going to cost about $172 million. After conferring with the other body, it was decided we should bring that even though all of the funds, the majority of funds are paid for by the state of Alaska, it was decided to bring that contribution rate even further down. And it was decided to bring that down to 12.56%. That added about $75 million to that component. Under the university and university and other contributions, that was about $23 million, and that totaled the totals the approximately $270 million in the operating budget. This is going to be paid for directly by the state to the administration and to the Armors Board. So these are bills. One good note is that these are bills that the school districts and the university will not have to pay for in the future. The 12.56% contribution rate will be included within the department's budgets and within the school district's budgets, but they will be able to plan on their costs in the future. On the second page, we have on page 58, line 8, we have the sum of $180 million from the general fund to the Department of Administration for PERS. And this is being handled in quite a similar manner. We still have to see the legislation that is being worked on by the Senator from Ketchikan on cost sharing. But primarily, we've had many districts throughout the state of Alaska having seen a large increase in their contribution rate. And I have just four or five of them that I'd like to go over with you today, Madam President. The largest community in the state of Alaska, the municipality of Anchorage, their contribution rate last year was 18.65%, or their contribution would be about $27 million. The Arms Board rate increased that to a level of 39.33%, or $59.5 million. This would have increased the amount that the municipality of Anchorage would have to pay by $33 million. The largest increase in the state of Alaska was the city of Fairbanks. Their rate, their contribution rate for FY07 was 35.67%, or just under $2.5 million. Their rate by the Arms Board was set at a whopping 185%. That was an increase. That increase brought their contribution level for 08 to about $13.2 million, or an increase of about $11.7 million. The city of Haines, their contribution rate was 27.2%, or for 07, with a total of $438,000, and the Arms Board set their contribution rate at 43.85%, or a total of $728,355. So their increase was $362.9 million. So you can get the thrust of what was happening to municipalities, and it was felt by the Finance Committee that if something wasn't done to assist those communities and center and all the communities that are participating in the PERS program, that this could potentially bankrupt these communities. So we have been working, and this is under my preview under the operating budget, but I've assigned this problem to the senator from Ketchikan, and he's been working on the legislation on cost share, and hopefully we can have that legislation before this body in the near future. But the total, basically this would set the rate, contribution rate, at 22%, which is still pretty high, but it's a lot better than what many of the communities in the state of Alaska are facing today. But this does not come at no expense in this budget of the amount of $180 million in the operating budget on page 58. Included in that amount is $66.7 million to bring the rate down for those local governments and municipalities to the level of 22%. And if the legislation is adopted, this is a percentage that these municipalities will be able to plan their community's future upon. And with the with not getting into too much detail, I think this, although this is a financial increase to the state of Alaska, I think it's one that we cannot escape. It is going to provide a great financial burden upon the state of Alaska if we accept this, and this is going to be a debate that's going to be held on this floor on whether or not we can accept that financial burden. But but at least for this coming year, we have included the dollar amount in that component. So those two items are probably the most significant items in the operating budget that is before you today. And again, I guess I would say that that it does give me great concern, but I think that the alternative of not trying to assist local governments will send them into bankruptcy, which will cause even further problems for the state of Alaska. So during the last two or three months, we've heard school boards and municipalities come down and asking for assistance. And hopefully we will be able to finalize their requests before the session ends. But at least the monetary terms for this next year are included in this budget, Madam President. We've also had extensive hearings up at the finance table during the last week. We spent many hours over a two-day period hearing testimony from the public on the operating budget, and we heard close to 200 individuals express their concerns about the operating budget. We heard from people from across the state, from Gullivan to Girdwood, North Pole to Craig, from Palmer to Holy Cross. We heard from Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Equock, Kodiak, Tok. We heard from Valdez, Soldotna, and Sitka. We heard their concerns ranging from tourism to independent living, from education to revenue sharing. We heard about employment centers, healthcare centers, public radio, legal services, and detox beds. Alaskans, we heard you, and within our means, we listened. We added back funds to address centers for independent living that we discussed about earlier to handle the 100% increase in the number of disabled and senior Alaskans served. We added back $500,000 to continue the operations for the detox centers in Fairbanks and Anchorage. We added back $200,000 to the charter schools. We added back $50,000 to vocational rehabilitation for interpreter services for the deaf and the hard of hearing. Funds were also added back to include for wastewater discharge permitting under the National Pollution Discharge Emission Systems for tourism and for state job centers. Madam President, I want to remind you, we are a bipartisan organization. We are trying to address the needs of the business communities in the state of Alaska, as well as the needs of individual Alaskans. Our goal was inspired by the governor requesting to live within our means at a time of uncertain revenues. We provided the services that Alaskans to hold the line as much as possible and keep state government's growth under control. At this time, I would like to thank all of you that participated in the budget process by providing your input to the subcommittee process. And a special thanks to the very fine Finance Committee members for the many hours that they spent on the operating budget. To the senator to my right, the senator from Juneau, to the junior senator from Fairbanks, thanks to the senator from representing Eagle River, and across the aisle, I'd like to thank the senator from Wasilla, the senator in front of me, the senator from Gullivan, last but not least, for all his energies, the senator behind me, the senator from Ketchikan. We spent many long hours making many difficult decisions for the state of Alaska. On behalf of the committee, I would also like to thank the Legislative Finance Department, the Finance Committee staff, as well as all the staff of the Finance Committee members for all their long and tireless hours of work. When I was co-chairman a few years ago, many years ago in the other body, I had the honor and privilege of sharing my committee work with my co-chairman, a representative from the Valley. About the budget, he used to say, many people think that this budget is too high, while others say there's not enough money in the budget. No one is completely happy, so he must have done something right. These were the words of Ron Larson, my co-chairman, many years ago. With that, I submit this operating budget for the fiscal year 2008 for your consideration. Thank you, Madam President.
Is there further debate? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I would also add my applause to the efforts of the Finance Committee and the co-chair. I think we benefit as a body by his ability to comprehend and to present information. So I say thank you to him and all the people that worked hard on the Finance Committee. Been there, done that. That's not an easy job. And in my new heaven in room 7, when folks come to me and say, you know, gosh, I need this and that, I'm in the privileged position. I say, you know, I'd really like to give it to you, but yet I got to go upstairs. So I know how hard it is. And especially when you look at this, and my reference, my summary today is referencing the Ledge Finance's summary of April the 13th, Friday the 13th. So you look at this, and line 23 is the appropriation to retirement, $449,992,300. You remember when we used to come back here in the early 2000, and we would have a $50 or $80 million increase in Medicaid? And our hair would be on fire. How are we going to do that? And we, you know, that was a catastrophe at that time. And here we are, faced with this thing that was handed to us in 2003, $450 million. Thank God we have the money to pay for that. I mean, it's just it boggles your mind. And this whole budget, as he's talked about, is under this cloud of this need for money to fund retirement. So I congratulate them for wrestling with it and coming up with a budget. Let me just say a few things about it. I'm concerned about the budget in a number of places. I guess my whole thrust is that this budget is growing. This will be, I'm not sure we want to acknowledge this, is the first $3 billion budget that will cross this floor. But I've been part of that buildup, and as we all have, and I don't demagogue that. I just say that's the way it is, and growing, and for all the reasons that we've talked about. But this budget also has some things that I'm concerned about, and I know we have 4 weeks from today left in this process, and I know we're all going to continue to work hard, conference committee and with legislation, to patch some of the problems I see with this budget. First, the MPDES continues to raise its head. This effort for state to take control of their permitting and take control of industry in our state and do it on our terms and do it on our timetable is very necessary for our state. We've started down that path in this budget. This budget, in spite of the efforts of the Finance Committee, doesn't complete the task, nor does it allow us to continue our march towards doing it ourselves and not the feds. It half funds, and half of the program is left without funding. And without that funding, the federal government is going to look at us and say, you don't have a way to support it, and we're not going to give you primacy. And without primacy, we can't get the funding as it was presented at Senate Finance, so it gets into a loop. I would just hope that the conference committee recognizes that we need to continue this, and I would encourage them to do so and fund at the full level so that we can continue that march to independence. Secondly, this budget is 15, as the summary says, 15.0% ahead of last year. But that there's a couple of problems with that, how we get to that number. There's $154 million out of this budget that is going to get added back in. And that's two pieces. There's on line 22, there is a $41.8 million unallocated reduction. Nowhere in the budget process, nor in the legislation that's going through, do I see where that $41.8 million comes from. It was part of the governor's suggestion, and it remains in the budget, but unless there's a plan, that $41.8 million will be added back in to this budget, so we should count on that. That'll drive up to 15%, of course. Then there's the senator spoke before me, spoke of the $75 million that transferred from the education fund over to the administration to fund retirement. That there is an offset to that, and I'm not able to find what that offset is, but that's a $75 million decrement to the 07 K-12 funding level. Some will be put back in. I don't know what it is for the moment, and as I conclude this, you'll understand that probably doesn't really make a lot of difference. So there's $75 million. And then the other is that in this budget, the district cost factor work we did last year and the school improvement grants are not in this budget. So that's $36 million that's out. So if you look at 07 and you take this budget as it stands, we're $154 million below FY07 with some coming back for PERS and TERS. And here we go again, retirement. So we're $154 million under 07. If we put that $154 million back in, we'll have a budget that grows at 20.1% over FY07. But then there's some pieces still missing, and the co-chair is fully aware of this and spoken, and we're all aware of it. There's no increases for K-12 over 07 levels. So we know that, and we're going to work on that. We're not going to leave here with funding it at 07 levels and pocketing $29 million from the foundation formula. So I know that's going to grow. So I just said, well, okay, let's just do what we did last year, $85 million. We put $85 million in the classroom last year, and we were all proud of that and helped a lot of people heal up some problems. So we'll probably put that back in. And then, there, of course, as the co-chair said, there's no money in for revenue sharing. So I just said, well, what if there's numbers all over the map for that? And, you know, pick a number. But let's just say we did what we did last year, $48 million. So we're going to add back ed funding of $85 million for some number. We're going to add back revenue sharing we did last year, $48 million. So we're going to add back $133 million back in. We've gone from 07 down, now back to 07. Now we're going up to 08 with these big expenditures. So if we do that, if we aren't going to get the unallocated reductions, which we all don't like to do, if we have to put back the K-12 money that's been taken out of 111.9, if we put in new K-12 money, as we did last year, of $85 million, and if we do revenue sharing, as we did last year, $48 million, we're going to put $287 million back into this budget. And that $287 million then will take this budget increase to 24.5%. Now, I'm going to vote no on this budget, and it's not because I'm going to stand up here and say it's not sustainable. Because everybody in this building, certainly everybody, all of my colleagues, know that 24.5% is not sustainable. And I want to just highlight one other problem that we have. We all know, and every year the clamor gets a little louder and the whispers get a little louder. We all know that federal funding is falling away. And, you know, it's just the facts for all sorts of reasons. This budget, and we have to have the courage to have the discussion whether when federal funding falls away, is our policy just to fill it back up, just to reach into the people's pocket and dump it back on and say, yes, by golly, that was a good program that the feds funded. Are we going to fund it out of the general fund? This particular budget, just so you know, has 46, and this number is changing, so forgive me if I don't get to the decimals. There has been in this fiscal year for this FY08 budget $46.6 million that has fallen away. About 60% of that is our FMAPs, which we all know about, but we're going to fill that back up. So about $47 million has just gone away from the feds that said, no, not this year. We've given it to you in the past, but it's your baby now. And we filled it back up. We filled that hole back up with about $44.5 million. So that's going to continue, and we need to have that discussion every year about those programs and decide. So that adds to our unsustainability. This budget isn't complete. The budget's complete. The effort isn't complete. And I know that for the next 4 weeks we'll continue to work on these things. But I'll be a no vote because this budget reflects a need or a path to revert back to federal efforts to improve industry and how we develop Alaska. That's not fixed today, but I know it will be fixed. Ed funding is, as we've acknowledged, is not adequate for K-12, in my opinion. It's not there today, but I know it will be. The revenue sharing, which the co-chair talked so well about, is something's going to be done with that. I know that through legislation, but it's not in this budget, but I know the effort will be. And of course there's no increase in education dollars, which I know you'll also take care of, and we'll be able to show a significant increase for K-12 to help the things we do in our system. So I could stand here and say I'm voting no because it's not sustainable, but I'm not going to demagogue that. We all know that. I think this underscores the situation that we are in for many reasons. We thought last year when we spent so much time on PPT that we were going to have money rolling out our ears. And for whatever reasons, we don't. And this is just a harbinger of times to come. So with that, Madam Chair, I applaud the effort. I'm concerned, as you all are, on a budget that increases 20 to 25%. But I also know that all of us are going to work on funding the priorities of government, and I'll be glad to help with that effort. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilkins. Senator Bundy.
Thank you. I'd like to rise to say I'm going to support this budget. I'd like to be able to do that. Unfortunately, I'm not able. I, too, appreciate the time and effort that went into it. I've been around that block also. And I'm not rising to criticize the amount of the budget, even though that is certainly a fluid state, and we want to be very careful that we're accurate in the total amounts of spending when we finally finish. But I'm concerned about priorities. I'm concerned about a budget that funds public radio but doesn't fund our emergency radio system for public safety. I'm concerned about a budget that leaves out funding or continued funding for a pay-for-performance pilot program that we established last year that is on the cutting edge of educational technology that improves teaching and teacher performance. I'm concerned about a budget that backfills state support for local cuts to domestic shelters that occur in one of the richest local governments in the entire United States, but yet ignores the 40 plus million dollars of unfunded mandates that we every year place on local communities for senior property tax exemptions. Local communities that actually are willing to step up and tax their citizens for the cost of some of the services that those citizens require, but we choose to ignore that unfunded mandate. Because of that and a number of other problems that have been elicited, the university not being fully funded, I'm not able to support that. If this were a project and submitted to me as a teacher, I would grade it as incomplete with the notation that not your best work, revise and resubmit.
Thank you, Madam President. May we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. Then we'll come back to order. Someone asked for a brief at ease. Is there further discussion? Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Madam President. I wanted the Senator from Fairbanks to go first because I know he's been tracking a lot of the budget issues, and he touched on a few of the concerns that I have, that in fact the budget before us, despite the total that it comes up to, is really not the complete document. And I appreciate the fact that the co-chair of finance started his comments by admitting to that there are things that are still under discussion. They're sizable, though. We do know that we've got the retirement problem. That's a problem that is facing most states across the nation. It's facing major corporations, so it's not something that we're suffering alone. But it appears that in order to make room for part of the fix for that, we have temporarily jettisoned things from the budget that ultimately will have to come back into consideration. And part of the concern, though, is for the general public that is trying to track where we are and where we're headed with total spending through the individuals who are sitting in the back bench here and report as best they can the facts, may see the total that was given today and think, well, that's it, that's our operating budget, when in fact that's not, that's just part of it. And so for members of the general public that try as best they can to keep up with what's going on down here, they may in fact miss where we are headed with total spending. I think the issue about backfilling federal funds as they dry up or go away for different reasons is an issue that the legislature needs to be concerned about. I know, having served on budget and audit for years, quite often when we, in the interim, adjust the budget as we are given the latitude to do, to accept federal funds, there's generally a question that is put to our finance folks about, will this obligate us in the future? And generally the committee is reluctant to accept and expend federal funds if in fact it does obligate the legislature in the future. And generally the answer is no. And so now I'm not sure, as these funds have gone away this year and we've backfilled, whether the subcommittees did an adequate job of looking to see, when we first accepted those monies, were we told that, don't worry, it doesn't obligate you, you're not going to have to step in, but yet here we are in fact doing so. And the risk that we run there is the policy call on the expenditures now of those general fund dollars was really made somewhere else. It was made back in D.C. if we don't adequately look at the backfilling that we're requested to consider. In fact, we have shed the policy call on what we do with state dollars, and that decision was made previously by another deliberative body outside of the state of Alaska. And I just wonder if we are adequately evaluating that. So knowing full well that we've got local government support that's an issue out there swirling around, we've got K-12 issues swirling around, the unallocated reduction that's in the budget. I'm not sure whether the administration was hoping that the legislature ultimately would spread those costs or not, but that certainly is not a preferential position to be put in. Student improvement grants that don't appear to be in this budget, and leaves us wondering, will that spending be filled here in the next appropriation bill or not? It used to be that we had a distinct separation between operating and capital, and it appears over the years that distinction has blurred somewhat, and that also is somewhat problematic. We are headed into a deficit spending. There are some things that are outside of our control that are driving us in that direction, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't redouble our efforts to look at ways of steering things back on course, or where the course that I believe the general public in the state would prefer that we go. Now, just touching on a few of the amendments, and we did have one amendment today that was the proposal to add in money, and there was no offset. It was on the larger issue of a policy call on funding for the university. And with the demands that we know, we are hoping very much that we are headed towards with regard to a trained and educated workforce, we thought that it was appropriate that we put that policy call out for the full Senate as a deliberative body to make a decision on today. The other amendments, one of them was pulled, and we are hoping that on Friday, under on reconsideration, we're going to take the co-chairman's word that he wants to revisit the language of that First Amendment that was withdrawn, and hopefully that will be incorporated on Friday. The other two amendments that dealt with dollar amounts in the budget were net zero, and the funding source came from our own funding source. And let me tell you, we are developing again a rollover mechanism that means that in our legislative budget we have more money than will be needed in fiscal year 08 to operate the legislature. We could have very easily made that shift to benefit programs or steer money into programs that don't create new infrastructure and bureaucracy. We utilize the existing network, drive scarce dollars down to those aged Alaskans who have the highest need. So I'm certainly disappointed as the proposer of those amendments that those net zero amendments weren't accepted when it would have been very painless for us to do so. So with that, we don't have any additional amendments. We don't intend to prolong the process, even though you had the votes to go from second to third reading today in your majority coalition. We were on board with doing that so that the process doesn't drag out longer than it needs to. We would, however, appreciate the honoring of offering reconsideration today and bringing it up on Friday. So again, that amendment that was withdrawn can be reconsidered. And we also understand there may be a technical amendment, a language correction that is also offered by the majority. And so that will come up on Friday. So thank you very much.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam President. Previously, we heard that there was 20-some-odd percent increase in the operating budget. And I guess you can count the numbers numerous ways. I certainly can't count that high. When we take a look at the management plan of fiscal year 07, where we're coming out of, and we take into account the supplementals that we had in this body of 50-some million, the oil and gas supplemental of almost 1.2, and fast track is 7, rounded off, and these are just rounded off numbers. Adjust the operating budget in 07 to about 3.2 billion. A little over that. The governor's amended budget for 08 is rounded off at 3.7. That is an increase. We have sitting right now with some potential adjustments coming with K-12 spending changes and new legislation and those things. We're going to be around possibly 3.6, 3.5, excuse me, 3.65 to 3.6. So we're going to be in pretty close to the governor's amended budget when it's all said and done and washed through the system, I think, the way the operating account looks. So that, depending on how
we end up dealing with the retirement system. As we all know, it's extremely burdensome for all of us, and probably for the next decade. But you know, we're going to have, you know, some relative changes somewhere down around 12 to 13% is what I'd expect year over year when we wash these through the system. But we also have to remember in the 07 management plan, we've got $182.7 million put away in power cost equalization and the savings. We also have